Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's horrifying tale is about this park ranger's experience during a brutal animal attack at a campsite where he was working. And upon further investigation, they may have found or have not found its lair of this creature. Stay tuned, it's about to get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. I'm not telling you this to incite fear, nor to discourage you from visiting the magnificent outdoors. If anything, this is for peace of mind. The woods and forests that grow proudly are awe-inspiring and beautiful to experience, but they are as equal in danger as they are to beauty. I used to be a proud park ranger for a good 17 years, and now I am but a shell of a man I once was. And the park is the reason for this. You see, I worked the usual laid-back kind of park ranger gig, patrolling the footpaths, ensuring campfires were adequately put out, and making sure campsites weren't piled up with trash. I had joined the park at 19, fresh out of high school. I always enjoyed the outdoors, the peace, the quiet, the ability to just be alone. I had no plans to travel or join the rat race. Being part of nature was always how I saw my life unfold. After my initial trial as a ranger, I was given my snazzy uniform, a flashlight, and a cozy cabin right in the middle of the park. With such breathtaking views surrounding me, I would have thought that I would have been the one who should pay them for being allowed to stay here. My days consisted of meeting with the other rotating staff in the park, giving small tours to some of the visitors that needed the help, and cleaning up the campsites of inconsiderate guests who left a mess. Being part of this cleanup crew is what changed my life for the worse. I can't remember when exactly it happened. My memory around that time is quite foggy now. My therapist said, forgetting events and details is the mind's way of trying to get past it and heal. But I don't think my mind will ever recover from what I saw, let alone what happened. I'll do my best to remember. It had started out like any other day. I woke up, stumbled to the kitchen, and poured a cup of coffee to get me going. As usual, I walked to the porch and stand to take in the morning glory of the forest while I drank my brew. It was always the most memorizing thing, hearing the birds whistle and calling, the wind blowing gently between the trees, and the other minuscule sounds that made up the morning canopy of wildlife sounds. The sun probably woke me up more than the coffee did, with it peeking between as many branches as it could, beating downward towards the ground. Leaves coating the ground, as if it was nature's inspired rug for the outdoors. One thing about this day that I distinctly remember was the sounds of the man shouting in the distance. The park is usually devoid of humans screaming and shouting, and so this stood out to me immediately. I didn't make out what was being said, but the shouts were not of joy or entertainment. I walked back into my cabin, picked up my radio, and called in to the main office to check on the situation. "Morning, Phil," I mumbled into the radio. "Howdy, Greg. What could I do for you this morning?" came the reply. I can't be sure, but it sounds like a man in distress, hollering somewhere close to the south campsite. "Any visuals or comms from that area?" I asked.
Not that I've heard so far. Let me reach out to Sydney on that side and see what he says."
I walked to the sink to wash my cup and I waited to hear back. I had barely put the cup down to dry when I heard my radio buzzing with chatter.
"So it seems we got a mauled animal at a campsite. A deer got torn up and dragged near the main site. Why not pop down and see if they need any help?" Phil asked me.
"Roger that," I grumbled.
I love animals and I hated messes. So the combination of a dead animal making a mess was the definition of something I hated. A coyote or something must have snagged a small deer and been disturbed as it tried to move the carcass to its lair. So we would have to go and dispose of the bloody mess left for the campers to see. What a great start of the day. Pulling on my boots, I wished I'd never bothered to radio my call-in. The guys in the south side could handle this sort of thing on their own. The leaves and sticks crunched beneath my boot as I walked down the shaded path in the direction of the campsite. Not a creature stirred or even made a sound. It felt almost as if I was walking in a dream. The light poking through the trees was the only thing illuminating my path, as the trees were so dense they seemed to form a barrier to the outside world. I took my flashlight out, finding the bouncing light to be comforting as I walked towards what I knew would be a grisly find. No matter how long you've been a ranger, the sight of a torn-up animal always makes you feel sick. But I guess that's the circle of life. I just wish life didn't have to be so cruel.
Not much longer after I had mentally prepared myself for cleanup, I stumbled upon the entrance to the campsite. Walking through the trees and towards the main area, I understood why the gentleman's screams could be heard from my cabin. There was blood everywhere, almost as if someone had tried to pull out the campsite with a bucket of blood. It covered some of the tents, as well as a great deal of the floor and trees. But that was just the start of the macabre display. Near the center of the site, right by the main area for the fires, were two deer's heads. Yes, just the heads. The bodies were nowhere to be seen. The heads had been ripped clean from their bodies. Bits of bone and flesh clung to their fur that remained on them. Blood had pooled where the heads lay. Before I could say anything to my colleagues standing in the area around me, I felt my coffee come back up. I emptied my stomach into a pile on the dirt, and felt even more sickened by the now combined smell of vomit and blood. "Crazy, huh?" Sydney asked me in awe. "Don't know what in the hell could do such a thing," he continued. "Well, if we listen to Stephen King over there," Joe said, pointing towards a man huddled in a blanket with paramedics. "We've got ourselves a werewolf," he said mockingly. Sydney further elaborated. "Man over there says he was making breakfast when some sort of creature ripped through the clear. He has no clear description on it, but he said it was absolutely massive, like 7 feet tall, and it stood on its hind legs through all of this." I was silent, my stomach still tossing and turning, trying my best to listen to what was being said, but unsure whether they were both trying to have a laugh because they saw me throw up. "Man claims it burst through the trees like some sort of monster and dragged the two deer behind it. Then when it saw him, it screamed and tore the deer apart. Completely demolished them. We can't even find the rest of their bodies. Only thing left were the heads and some of the organs," Sydney said. The man looked inconsolable. He seemed to be the only person present. I started walking towards him when Joe grabbed me by the arm and shook his head. "Don't bother. He's just been repeating the same story over and over. We're all heading back to the main office to divide into teams and start patrolling. We need to catch this animal. It may have rabies or something." I nodded my head as I walked towards the park-designated Jeep used by staff. I boarded the vehicle with almost no thought, and soon we were in front of a calming fire at the main office. The voices around me seemed to drone as the staff debated and discussed what had occurred, as well as the next steps we should carry out. My mind was a million miles away, still trying to process that massacre I had seen. I didn't understand how everyone around me was so calm. Before I knew it, Joe was dragging me back towards the Jeep.
"Are you not going to take one?" he asked in an annoyed voice.
"Huh? Take what?"
I asked in confusion.
"A gun, dumbass.
We are literally on the hunt for a wild animal. Jesus, man," he barked back to me. I fumbled back towards the armory. I picked up one of the assigned rifles with the magazine of ammo. I signed it out and walked back towards Joe. I jumped in the car and we began our search. As with the earlier conversations and discussions, the drive itself is little more than a blur. I just remember Joe shouting obscenities and being overly excited for this hunt. I really did not know why he was so keen to shoot an animal. Yes, it had been brutal in the way it killed those deer, but it may be sick. We should be able to help it before we set out to kill it. I felt like I would vomit again, but managed to push it down. It was the feeling of dread that I was not able to fight. Before I had the chance to get out of my head and come up to terms with what was happening, the Jeep had come to an abrupt stop. Joe was scrambling in the back seat, desperately stashing things in his pocket. "What's going on?" I asked him in a daze. "I think we may have found it. I saw some blood on some of the shrubbery leading towards this clearing. There's a small cave a little further up, so I think that's the creature's lair," he said with excitement. "Why don't we turn the spotlight on and call for the others?" I asked, not wanting to get out and pursue this thing on foot. "Why the hell would we wait? We have the chance to put this thing down now. What if we scare it away and it kills a kid?" he asked me. "We could patch in our location and go and get started before they get here." I had to agree with his logic. Best we act now, rather than risk anyone in the park if this thing got away from us. I exited the vehicle and began loading up my supplies. The darkness from the trees surrounded us, so my flashlight and backup batteries were the first things to go into my pocket. The Aegis rifle was next to be picked up. Ammunition loaded and spare clips put into the side pockets. We fastened the necessary flashlights for the rifles and stood next to each other in silence. I didn't want to move or speak first, so I waited for Joe. I felt he may have felt the same, and so eventually he said, "Well, this beast isn't going to shoot itself," and we walked towards the cave. The thickness of the forest began to make me feel claustrophobic. The dense trees that I usually loved and appreciated seemed to now act as a prison, preventing us from leaving. This would be our tomb, a green, cold, and mossy tomb. I began to sweat, and the cold shivers that ran down my spine made me second-guess ever becoming a ranger. I tried to reason with myself that nothing could possibly be this scary. We were two trained park rangers with weapons. We were as safe as can be. This thought gave me some reassurance, and I followed Joe with a little more courage. We reached the cave entrance, and I immediately noticed that there was not a single sound in the area. Not a bird, not a cricket, not a sound. Joe seemed to notice this too, as I saw him hesitate before he got right up to the entrance. We looked at each other, nodded, and stepped into the cave, side by side. The darkness of the cave swallowed us. I had thought the trees outside darkened everything, but the cave was devoid of all light. I felt as if I was swimming in the very bottom of an ocean, all alone, deaf and blind. I shuffled a little to my side so that my shoulder was touching Joe. Feeling him next to me gave me a little more security. "Let's get this thing and get the hell out of here," Joe whispered to me. I just about mumbled my agreement when we heard it. It was a low, guttural growl. I had never heard anything like it. The sound caused us to freeze where we were. I heard the sound of Joe clicking the safety on his gun. He was ready to shoot. I heard a quiet shuffling on our right, and that is when it happened. I heard a loud roar next to me, and I realized Joe had fired his weapon. I couldn't see anything, so I was quite confused as to what was happening. My ears were ringing, and Joe's flashlight was bouncing all over the place. I turned the other way so my back would be to Joe and we would have a better field of view. As my ears stopped ringing, I heard my trembling breath turn to a whimper. Joe began to scream. I turned towards him immediately and was greeted with a warm spray of mist. Clasping his arm, I could see only red where his left hand used to be.
"The bastard got me!" He screamed at me, "Shoot it!" He continued. I was dazed and confused. I moved from side to side, trying to get my flashlight to hone in on something. With my back turned, I heard yet another blood-curdling sound from Joe. It sounded like he was choking. I pivoted around to him, and my light focused on his blood-covered face. He was making a nightmarish gurgling sound, and I could see blood pouring profusely from his neck. There was terror and panic in his eyes as he clutched at his throat, desperate to make the blood stop. I was frozen in fear, unable to help Joe, unable to move. That's when I heard the growl again. And then I felt nothing. I saw nothing. There was nothing. When I woke, I immediately felt a searing pain on the side of my head. I could barely move with the pain emanating from my head. The room was light somehow. I wasn't in the damned cave. Had it been a dream? I turned my head slowly, pain growing worse from the movement. I recognized the medical wing from the park, with Sydney sitting by my side. "Oh, buddy, you're with us," he said. "Don't move. You need the rest. We thought we were going to lose you back there." "We lost Joe. We'll fill you in on it once you're up again. But we got there just in time to fire on that thing. It took a swipe at you, but we put it off enough for it to run. It would have killed you if we hadn't gotten there in time. Rest, buddy. You need it." I tried to talk, but was unable to. "It's still out there. We hit it with a few rounds, but it got away. It moves so bloody fast. We've called in support, so hopefully we get another crack at it," he continued. "It will pay for what it did to you and Joe."